Shadow Falls Badlands. The story so far. Galen finds himself under the control of the Gypsy Crone, and even she seems to know more about him than he does. Her task for him is to steal an ornately carved ebony box, the very object he recently delivered into the hands of a rich old man named Elias Dunburton. Galen takes the box at gunpoint, but then later, after looking inside, he realizes what the crone wants isn't something he's willing to give up quite yet. And when he returns to the gypsy's fortune-telling parlor, he pays back the crone for using him as a pawn. He pays her back with vengeance. Chapter 7. Galen gazed down at the smoking derringer. As the gypsy crone had fallen, her blood had sprayed onto his hands and coat. He tossed the gun aside and took one last look into the open eyes of the dead crone. Galen stepped over to where the ebony box still lay face down and open upon the wooden floor of the parlor. He picked it up, reached into his pocket, and replaced the box's original contents before closing the carved ebony lid and dropping it back into his coat. Hastily, he made his way down the street, picking up the pace with each step until he was at a full run, the vapor of his breath trailing in the frigid air. Halfway to the waterfront, Galen came across a steed that had been tied to a hitch. Checking up and down the street for its owner, Galen untied the horse and rode away into the night. For nearly 2 hours, he could feel the box inside his pocket alive and slithering until he could bear the madness of it no longer. Finally, he came across an abandoned house that by the looks of it had recently been vandalized. Galen tied the stolen horse to a tree out of sight and carefully entered the dwelling. The place had been thoroughly picked through, though there were signs that squatters had been there recently. Galen checked to make sure he was alone. He found a broken chair and used it to start a small fire in the hearth. His stomach rumbled from hunger, but quickly that faded from his mind because again he could feel the box in his pocket slithering inside his coat. He sat on the floor by the fire and with a trembling hand brought out the box. The carving, snakes of unknown origin, seemed to move under his fingers, and Galen fought the fear rising up inside him. With a soft click, he threw the latch and opened the box. Inside was the eye. The eye, which had once belonged to a living creature of some sort, but had over time grown into a petrified state, was what the gypsy crone and the banker had both coveted. Galen now understood why, for it had certain cognizant powers. He picked up the eye and cupped it in the palm of his hand. The outside felt smooth and uneven, save for the slightly rough area in the back where the nerve stalks had long broken away. As he had done before returning to the gypsy crone's parlor, he stared into the eye's black iris and could instantly feel himself drawn into it, falling, like tumbling down into a darkened well. The first time he'd gazed into the milky cornea of the eye, he'd seen how the crone had drugged him and used him to gain that which he had brought to the banker. But that scene was now replaced by a new, much more terrifying one. And that's when he felt it, an intense pressure building up between his temples, a dull pounding ache as if something inside his skull were to break through like a hatchling busting out of its shell. Galen screamed as the pain grew, and without warning his body felt limp, as if it were no longer attached to his cerebral cortex. The intensity welled, and his brain felt like it was on fire. He screamed again, but this time no sound came forth, only the hiss of air escaping his throat. The mounting pressure inside his head built to the point that every molecule that made up his human body began shaking violently as if trying to escape the atomic gravity keeping him inside this existence. Then suddenly, as quickly as it started, it stopped. And all Galen could feel was an overwhelming sense of light and silence, save for the soft whoosh of air gently passing him. Here, where there was no pain, there was no suffering, there was only an inescapable brightness all around him. Galen looked around, finally gazing down. Below his feet, several hundred yards down, he could see the ground. He was above a dense forest, serene and silent, stretching as far as the eye could see against the blue sky. Galen cocked his head. From here, he realized he could hear birds singing in the trees. But suddenly, their music stopped. And from the woods below, thousands of birds took wing, scattering every which way as if escaping. And that's when Galen spotted it. At first, the smoke rising in black wisps funneling into the sky masked the orange corona of light rising from underneath the thick green canopy. But as the first flames broke through, the speed in which they spread was astounding. Within moments, the fire rushed towards Galen's direction with a deafening roar, consuming everything in its path, reducing the forest to a cinder. The bird song Galen heard before was now being replaced by something more sorrowful. First one voice gently sobbing in the distance, followed by another, their anguished cries for help rising at the level of a whisper that grew louder by 1,000, then 10,000, then 100,000. Voices swarming all around him as the sky suddenly began to gray, finally giving way to a frightening and oppressive sense of total dark. And now Galen could sense their ascendancy from untold depths, monstrous creatures of the abyss spreading like plague across the world below, their gnashing yellow teeth making short work of all flesh unfortunate to fall within their clutching grasp. Those unlucky enough to survive, then cast into chains, turned into slaves. With a crack of thunder, the sky above Galen opened as a single shaft of pure illumination punched through the darkness. From here, Galen could see them, winged figures of light pouring from the sky. Together they come, darkness and light in a deafening clash of weapons, holy warriors locked in ancient combat. From above, Galen can see as the battle rages. An archangel impales a slobbering horned beast on the end of a mighty sword, while another has his wings torn asunder by the razor-sharp claws of a dozen hellspawn. The blood of the righteous and unrighteous flow until every last river on earth runs red. The carnage is magnificent, no quarter offered, none taken, and as the thunder rolls, Galen could see it. Standing at the head of this unending phalanx of darkness was a man with eyes like smoke and the head of a coyote. And it is upon this face that Galen zooms in on, as if speeding toward it like a rifle shot. He knows he's seen this face before. And with a flash, he's back on that dirty ghetto street in Veracruz, watching as a now coyote-headed Cyril carves the scalp from the young girl's head. With a second flash, he's back to the door of the church that Cyril set aflame, locking the innocent Mexican Catholics inside. And as Galen stood immobile to the atrocities before his eyes, Cyril turned to grin at him. Again, his head that of the coyote. And as the cursed eye fell from Galen's trembling hand, the spell it had cast over him was broken and he was back sitting on the floor of the abandoned house. For minutes, he stared at the eye, which lay on the floor, gazing blankly upwards through its milky cornea. "Why do you show me these things?" Galen shouted angrily at the eye. Then in a fit of rage, he scooped it up off the floor and threw it into the fire burning in the hearth. The night brought a fitful sleep for Galen, for the images he'd been shown were burned into his mind. Every time deep slumber knocked at the door, it was quickly turned away by the horrors that kept him awake. As dawn broke, Galen picked himself up off the hard and freezing cold floor and fled the house, leaving the carved ebony box behind. The horse, by some miracle, had survived the night out in the cold, and not surprisingly, was not happy with Galen. Nonetheless, when Galen saddled himself on the steed, it trotted away, most likely pleased to be moving. Several miles away, Galen came to a junction. The road forked both to the east and the south. Though he was not sure why, a voice in his head told him east would bring him face to face with what he had seen in that terrible eye. Turning around the way he had come, however, back toward Kansas City and the possible consequences for his actions, was not an option. Galen shook his head and pointed the steed south. Dunburton had spent the night in his study, drunk and despondent over the sudden loss of the object he had spent so many years coveting. To have it slip through my fingers, he thought. It was maddening. When he had opened the box to check its contents upon arrival, the eye had given him a brief look into the man who had brought it. A mere glimpse, but enough to see that Tom Holt was certainly not who he pretended to be. That Tom Holt was actually one of the only San Patricio deserters to escape final judgment. Had he been able to coerce a confession over dinner, he would have had him arrested, or more appropriately, killed him on the spot, claiming the rights of his former military rank. Instead, he allowed Tom Holt to take away the eye, the object he'd procured by using his own money to purchase the bank deed to a particular ranch and applying pressure on the owner, until the object he so desired had come loose. Perhaps the rancher knew this would happen, Dunburton thought to himself. If the man had used the eye to divine the outcome of this transaction, it was quite possible. The thought very much angered Dunburton. Had he been a younger man, still in his fighting prime, he would have gone after Tom Holt himself. That's not his real name, thought Dunburton. The eye had told him the true identity, but it all seemed clouded in his mind through the bourbon and anger. But it burned inside him. Here he was, an outlaw, a deserter, a traitor who had cheated justice during the war. Dunburton slammed his fist against his desk hard enough to knock his near-empty bottle to the floor. He'd be damned if he wasn't going to see justice served. And from his desk, he withdrew a sheet of paper, and steadying his hand with another sip from his tumbler, he began a letter to the only other man he knew who would want to do something about it. The weeks passed as Galen drifted toward the Mexican border. As he got closer, his pace seemed to slow. Galen knew why, of course. It had been years since he'd been in Texas, years since he'd been a soldier who had fought for his country in the name of manifest destiny, and then shortly thereafter against his country to preserve decency as he saw it. His time in Texas had been nightmarish from the start of his service, and his time south of the border hardly better. But he had heard rumors that those who had served under the Mexican flag with General Santa Anna and the Brigade of St. Patrick's would have been given a hero's welcome in Mexico, had they lived. And as far as Galen knew, he was the only surviving San Patricio, the only one who could genuinely testify to the reasons for his desertion. Perhaps we were killed to keep us quiet, he often thought. Though Galen knew the dead often found ways to tell their secrets. Of everything that happened, everything he had seen and been part of, the atrocities committed against the Mexican civilians scarred him the deepest. And if there was a place to even begin to atone for what he'd done and for what he'd been unable to prevent, it was Mexico, Galen thought. A new life, a new start, he imagined. As far as his best guess, he had crossed into Texas a few days earlier and would make it across the border soon. He gazed out past the shimmering heat rising from the desert floor before him, and that's when he felt the first thump. The horse, the same one he'd stolen during his quick departure from Kansas City, had hardly taken to him during their weeks together and had become increasingly sullen. The last 2 days it had barely eaten, and with one final weakened step, the animal collapsed, throwing Galen onto the ground. Galen thudded hard, face first. He pushed himself up to his elbows, spit out a mouthful of dirt, and looked back at the horse, which now lay dead just a few feet away. He got to his feet and brushed himself off. The border was close. He'd just steal another horse to get there. How hard could that be? He reckoned. At 12:30 on May the 12th, the post bag had been delivered to Fort Jones. The mail had been routed west via stagecoach to their outpost in Scottsburg in the California Territory. The coach itself had been delayed a week during a scheduled stop in the mining town of Hooperville when it was reported there had been a hostile Indian attack further up the trail just a few days earlier. The coming of the mail at Fort Jones had been met with a crowd of soldiers since its arrival marked the first post bag in 2 months. Nearly all the men stationed there had been expecting letters or packages sent to them from somewhere. All the men but one, a lieutenant who had no family other than the army. So when a slack-jawed private brought a letter addressed to him, he was quite surprised. The envelope had been posted some weeks back from Kansas City, the home of one of his former commanding officers. Given the advanced age of the man, it was all the lieutenant could do to not think the letter contained notice of the great man's passing. Instead, he was pleased to discover the note had been penned in the old man's own, albeit shaky, hand. "My dear friend, it is with great consternation that I report this news, but I have discovered something I believe is of great interest to you. One of the last surviving betrayers to the flag known as the San Patricios has crossed my path as I live and breathe. Though I was not able to make his true identification until he had left my presence, I am positive this man is the last of the traitorous mob you have diligently brought to justice. I am but an old man now, unable to do this duty for my country, but I trust as one of the soldiers formerly under my command that you still have the desire and the general orders to hunt down any surviving San Patricios so they may answer for their crimes." Quietly, Cyrus read the rest of the letter containing the details which he'd need to begin his hunt. And after he was done, he folded it neatly back into its envelope and tucked it away inside his tunic. He took his hat in his hands, the hat of an officer of the U.S. Army, and placed it upon his head and stepped outside into the sun. And that's when a very wide grin crossed his face. When Galen finally opened his eyes, the flash had ended. He had come completely back to the present. Again, he was there in the dry riverbed, a day's walk from the town of Sagebrush. Holding the lamp and staring back at him across the dim firelight was the ghastly and rotten face of the girl whose life he had done nothing to save back in Veracruz. Galen had run from so much over the past few months, the past few years. It was all he knew. But that was about to end. Deep inside, underneath the fear he felt in his heart, Galen sensed the running was over. After tonight, he would be moving forward, though toward what, he was unsure. This terrified him much more than what he had already left behind. "What if you aren't real?" Galen asked the apparition before him. The answer came as the girl from Veracruz raked her bony and splintered fingers across his face, drawing blood along his cheek. Galen reacted. Stunned, he pulled his hand away to find his own blood on it. "The powers that wish you to take this journey are stronger and more unforgiving than you can ever imagine. What you left behind in the town of Sagebrush will be nothing if you choose to disobey fate's warning," she hissed. "If you do not take the path that has been laid out for you, death will follow in your wake, taking with it the innocent." "What exactly is waiting for me there at the end of this path?" Galen asked. "If you are wondering if you will be saved, then you labor to ask the wrong question." "Then will I be damned?" Galen asked. "Oh, you are already damned, Galen Altos, but tonight there is reason to believe your fate has not been completely written as of yet." And as she turned her face away, with a puff of breath, the dead girl from Veracruz blew out the lamp and plunged both of them into total darkness. And that's the end of part one of Shadowfall's Badlands. Galen Altos is a man troubled by his past, but his visions of the future, are they a portent of things to come, or just the hallucinations of a man gone insane? Join us for Chapter 8 as we kick off Part 2 of Badlands, where Galen sets off on his journey, but will it be one of redemption or damnation? Big thanks, of course, to the band Black Lab for the Shadowfall's Badlands Part 1 theme song, This Night. And you can find out more about Black Lab at blacklabworld.com. Questions, comments, send them to me at shadowfalls@podshowla.com. And remember to tell all your friends to listen to Shadowfall's Badlands at shadowfalls.podshow.com. Until next time, this is Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, fading to black.
Done. There's a place I have gone. There's a beast and I let it run. Now it's running my way. There are things I regret. You can't forget. There's a gift that you sent. You sent it my way. So take this night, wrap it around me like a sheet. I know I'm not forgiven, but I need a place to sleep. So take this night and lay me down on the street. I know I'm not forgiven, but I hope that I'll be given some. There's a game that I play. There are rules I had to break. There's mistakes that I made, but I made them my way. So take this night.